Here we go. It's hour number two on this Tuesday afternoon. My friend Tim Cheat is here. How about a round of applause for Timmy? He's counting. He's counting who's applauding. My friend Tyler's not applauding. He's too busy on the phone. Let's go, Tyler. Let's go. All right, Timmy.
I got 24.
Let's get to the details again. How many years as an MLB umpire?
29.
29. How many games?
3,700 and something.
How many guys ahead of you?
Oh, plenty.
Plenty.
There's... I would
10?
Oh, at least. Probably 20.
Probably 20?
Probably 20. But see, back in those... The earlier year, guys worked longer, and they didn't get time off.
Yeah.
So, they worked 162 games a year. I never did that.
How many games off does the typical umpire get this year?
You get four... Like, let's say the two of us and you two, we're a crew of four people. We get four.
That'd be a tough situation,
yeah, no
by
kidding.
The way. I know those two too well.
I think I'm working the plate every night on that
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
But we work together, and then we get 1 week off every 7 weeks. It rotates for everyone. And then one of your 4 weeks, you can pick. Say you have a graduation or a wedding or something. I need that time off. So... The season is 183 days. Take away 28. Average schedule will feature 13 to 15 open dates on it. So where are we? How's math so far?
So we're looking maybe 135.
135 some games. And now it's even less because guys are working replay.
Yeah.
So although working replay still constitutes umpiring, you're not on the field, but you are away from home and you are doing the job.
Okay. Let's talk baseball first, and we'll talk fair because you've been working. How many years you've been working for giggles out here at the campfire?
2013. Right after I came out of baseball. Yeah.
Because we got to talk about last night and everything that was taking place out here. It was a bleep show, to say the least. Okay. Tim Cheetah's assessment of replay as it stands right now in Major League Baseball is?
A 9 out of 1 to 10 for me.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's necessary. I mean, in all sports, it's necessary because today's, no matter what the major sport is, NBA, NFL, NHL, MLB, they're so big and they're so fast. And they're so strong.
And the technology is so good.
The technology has finally caught up.
Yeah.
And there are certain things now that you simply can't see with the naked eye. And you do your best, you know, to get in the proper position, and you try to react to the ball as best you can. When the shift came in to vogue, it became harder to work second base because now you had to move your position completely opposite as to what you've ever learned.
Right.
Because they're playing in completely different spots, and the plays are going to different bases from different areas of the field than what used to be.
And you're moving a lot.
You're moving, and your natural reaction as an athlete is to always move toward the ball. Here in umpiring, you have to move away from it because you got to get out of the way, and then you got to be in a position to see the play. So that's a whole nother learning curve that comes along halfway through your career. The undisciplined level at which they play sports, you know, as they say, they make the fantastic play, but they can't make the everyday play.
Yeah.
That also makes it difficult to umpire because what should have happened didn't happen, and something else that you never thought could happen did.
Well, I'll give you an example, and I forget who was his second. Julian just screws up the Sunday afternoon, right?
Right.
And the second base umpire is coming in.
Almost
got hit by the ball because he just expected
they
expected that Julian was just going to make the simple throw over to Castro.
Right, and part of that I hang on the umpires to this point is they haven't spent enough time learning how to work behind the fielders. For years we worked in front of them.
Yeah.
And when you work behind a fielder, I always would tell my guys, you stand like, I don't know if I can illustrate this on radio, but if you're working on the third base side with the shortstop, you stand as close as possible to him without hindering him at the time of the pitch. Because as soon as the ball's hit, you only have to take one step and you're clear.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're five steps from him toward second base, the more he moves, the more you have to move.
Yeah.
And now you're moving yourself away from your play.
Right.
So it's not being taught, primarily because the guys that are in the supervisory positions aren't teaching it. I'm not on that staff, so.
Why don't they do that?
They don't know how to do it either.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and that's only only because I'm an older guy, and we worked that way. I mean, I came up in the early '80s, so that's a long time ago, and the whole instructional, style of teaching this, the people that are teaching it, they can only teach what they know, and probably should go back to some of us old-timers that say, hey, wait a minute, what are we doing wrong here?
Would you want to have a role like that?
Not on a full-time basis, no. If you notice, you get into supervision of officials, I think the NFL is just named their fourth guy in the last, 10 years. They last about 2 years, and they just get worn out because nobody calls the supervisor of officials to tell you what a great job Chad Hartman did today. Oh, was he good? Yeah. I mean, he got everything right. He was
not many people in life call and offer that statement.
They call when you do something wrong. Yeah. Guess what? There's 15 games a night.
Yeah.
There's going to be 15 mistakes somewhere out there, and your phone's going to ring 15 times.
Okay, on positioning. Okay, so you're coming up to the 80s. Let's go Twins 80s. It's Gagne short. It's Gaetti third. And you're moving around. Maybe it's more, second baseman Lombardozzi. How often are they saying, Timmy, slide one step to the right? Or how often are they talking to you as much as you're trying to be in the right spot? Where they got to tell you to move just a little bit, or does that not happen?
Probably 50%.
Okay,
half the time. And I go, and I'm flexible. I mean, I want to be able to, the one thing, I always made a deal with those guys. You tell me where you want me to stand. You tell me who's covering. All right? Give you this, you give me that.
Would they?
Sure. Okay. Absolutely. And it wasn't, it wasn't it wasn't a big trick or anything. But it was, hey, Timmy, can you go one to the right, one to the left? And it's not annoying. It's working together.
Yeah. Okay, I'm home last night, and I'm watching the weather in Plymouth, and I turn on Target Field, and I'm thinking, oh, they're not going to start this game. They started the game.
I know.
And I don't understand why. Okay, can you explain that one to me?
Well, Target Field probably more than any other stadium in Major League Baseball, and I'm going to take a little credit for this. When they designed the ballpark, they asked me to design the umpire's dressing room. And I asked them, where is the groundskeeper's office? And they said, well, it's out in center field because that's where all the tractors and everything come on. I said, well, you might want to rethink that. Well, why is that? Well, because when it's raining, you guys haven't had to deal with rain since the Metrodome was built.
Yeah.
And you've started every game on time since 1981. That's not going to happen anymore. And they said, we never even thought of that. I said, well, you should put the groundskeeper very close to the umpire's room because they're going to have to be working in tandem
to
get this thing right. And we need close access to radar. And the teams have TVs in their locker rooms. They know what's coming. They can count those. So there's no secrets.
No.
All right. Everybody's on the same page here. When you have the teams generally want to play. They're at the park. They want to play. You don't have to talk them into going out there. And when the Twins even took it one step further. They put a radar room right behind the visitor's dugout, which you can't see. But if you go down the steps and behind it, it's a room about from Chad to here, and it's got a gigantic monitor in there, and there's always a full-time meteorologist there every game. There's like three guys and they rotate, and you've got immediate access to where it is, when it is, what's it, how far away it is. So typically if you have an hour window at game time,
you're gonna start
you start because there's always that chance that you try to wait it out. You try to wait out that hour, and all of a sudden, it goes away, and you've sat for an hour for no reason. So you got to.
And we've all
started.
Watched that in our everyday.
You got to get it started, and so that's a tough call. People ask me 1,000 times, "What's the hardest call as an umpire?" Rain, money. Rain means money, and money makes people nervous.
But last night, it seemed
I know
incredibly clear.
Yeah,
we were having a storm of some significance. That was coming, and we're going to talk about what it was like out here at the fair in moments. But you were told here at the fair, 7:15, and it hit 7:15.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It came from downtown Minneapolis, so I don't understand. I mean, Bailey Ober also probably doesn't understand why it started. I mean, What's your theory?
Yeah, I didn't really have, you know, I didn't have the game on. I didn't see it live because I was working. But I don't know if they got bad information or if they just decided we're going to beat it. You know, ultimately, now you got the Braves in town, so they're only here once.
Yep.
So
the goal, you got two more dates.
You got two more dates, and the forecast is favorable. So
very
if you have
good.
To play two, it's not going to be a big issue. And now they have the right to play split doubleheaders whenever, so they don't lose the gate, which is the big thing.
That's you the know, whole thing. It's money.
A gate's $3 million bucks minimum, yeah. minimum on a low attendance day. So I don't know. I just have to believe that they had a forecast for them that said it was going to be an hour.
A lot of times if we get, and Tim Cheetah's with us, longtime Major League Baseball umpire, a lot of times if there's a big controversy in Major League Baseball regarding an umpire, we'll call you. We'll reach out. We've done that a lot.
Sure.
We haven't had a year with many of those at all, have we?
No. It's been a good year for the guys.
Is that just good fortune? Or are we better with the replay? Has something changed?
I think it's... I think everybody, you know, if they put in some new rules last year, you know, the speed-up rules and all that sort of thing. So that takes adjustment time. It takes adjustment time on the part of the umpires and the part of the players. Now it's in its second year. They're more accustomed to what mm-hmm. it is. So
yep.
so when you see a pitch clock violation, it's not going to be followed by an argument because they understand it now. Or any of these particular violations, they get it. So you move on. The only thing left to argue now is balls and strikes. So anytime you see an ejection in a game today, it's going to be over pitches. That's the because they have replay,
yep.
and they have the opportunity to correct it. So that's all that's left. And if a manager's over there dying to get kicked out because he's lost eight straight, he's just going to wait for a close pitch and start chirping.
And you know that.
We know that. They
yeah.
know that, I should
yeah.
say. Yeah,
right.
And, you know, you see it coming, and that's it. But, yeah, overall, I think the staff, you know, in the last 3 years, they've had a huge turnover. So a lot of young guys who were unknown to the players and the managers and the media now are in their third, fourth year. And it's, you know, they're more familiar with each other. They're more comfortable at umpiring at the major league level on a daily basis. Everything kind of comes together. And I think it's going to be that way for a while because their staff is very, very young. They lost, in the last 2 years, they lost like 12 guys to retirement, 12, you know, crew chiefs. And they had to replace all those guys.
That's a lot.
That
right?
is a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
We'll get to a little more baseball, but Tim works out here for giggles. And yesterday, when the storm came in, you saw the video. It was serious. And I mean, there was flooding. Obviously, the fair didn't start until 9 a.m. today, as opposed to a couple hours earlier. We'll get Timmy's perspective on what it was like. Tim Cheetah is here. It's 20 past 1 on the home of the Twins, WCCO. Tom, unfortunately, I got to jump in because we're jumping back in the air. Hang around a little bit. You can chat with him afterwards. Timmy Cheetah is here. Good questions for everybody in the audience. I'll get to some of these questions because it made me think of a couple things. But, okay, you're out here. You're working here for giggles, as you said, since 2013, since you left. You're a little bit up the ways from here, but Giggles does a very good job. You do a great job running it. As this storm is coming in, what are you guys doing to prepare, and what was it like out here? Because I was out here from about 10:30 to maybe 3:30 yesterday, and it was scorching.
Oh, miserable.
It was absolutely miserable out here, and I was elated to get out of here. So take me through the next few hours, what it was like.
Well, it was the slowest day I think I can ever remember, for one thing. It was senior day, and most of the seniors, I mean, I get here at 1 o'clock, I just take the bus. I get off at the main gate. When I was walking in, everybody was walking out. They'd had enough.
Enough,
They peaked. And I got up to the good thing was I was able to buy some of those peachy donuts because there's usually a line
of 100, line is crazy.
200 people. There was 12 people in line. Yes. I said, I'm not going to let this pass. So I bought a bunch of
donuts.
They're
really good.
They are good. And then the fair, you know, we were cutting people like crazy because, you know, you're standing around. It's not going to get any busier than it is right now. So trust me, this next 7 days, you're going to be working plenty because the weather looks really good. And this place is totally dependent on the weather.
It is, 100%.
You look at today. Today's going to be just like Saturday. It's just going to be that steady stream of business all day long.
Because obviously some people were wary, and then it started 2 hours late. But It's, I mean, I've been in this spot for so many years. Yeah. This is a good Tuesday crowd.
They're here.
Yeah.
Yep, they're here and they're spending. And so last night I got a text from the fair people themselves about upcoming possible, you know, back then, at that time, it was just a severe thunderstorm watch. And then at about 6:40, they updated me again and said it's a warning and it's going to be right there at 7:15 p.m. And they were right on the money. So I had, at about 10 to 7, you know, our pavilion is covered.
You've got a nice setup.
We're weatherproof. You know, if it's hot, you can get out of the sun. If it's raining, you can get out of the rain. And I just went to the people sitting on the outskirts that were not covered. I said, you might want to slide in because we're supposed to get hit here in a very short period of time, and it's supposed to come with 40-plus mile-an-hour winds. And coming from that direction to here, you know, we basically had to button down everything that was facing north.
Yeah.
So we did, and, you know, we've done it before. We've had to do it before. The majority of our equipment outside at the beer garden is covered, but we do have probably 10% that needs to be, buttoned down to make sure it doesn't blow away. We had no damage, but we had a single guy playing a keyboard last night. He's really, really good, by the way, and he's going to be there again tonight. And
did you make him keep playing even though the
storm was going on? I offered it to him. Well, again, he was covered. I said, if you want to go ahead.
Yeah.
He said, no, I love it. Have at it.
Yeah.
So the last 75 people on the fairgrounds were at our place listening to music.
That's pretty good.
And then that's it. I went up and said, okay, folks, that's it. Pick them up and start walking. We are done. I'm sending my employees home.
So. I'm home, but I'm on Twitter, and I'm paying attention because Plymouth was a part of the show. Seth Kaplan does a really good job for Channel 9. And when he showed the amount of flooding that was taking place out here, I don't remember seeing that.
No, me neither. And then, of course, this morning, and it was so loud. I don't know if you heard it or not, but it was way loud this morning, about 5.
Yeah.
And I got up, and it was pouring again. I mean, it's
been a garbage summer.
It really
Let's just be
has
honest.
Been. It's been extreme.
Yes, exactly.
Extreme in both directions.
We'll get back to baseball here. I'll remind folks, we're going to give out a four-pack of Twins tickets. They're presented by Miller Marine, a Power Lodge of St. Cloud, Bennington Pontoon's largest dealer. The tickets, don't call in yet. You'll hear the Twins song. They call in. This Saturday against the Blue Jays, the individual who you dealt with in your almost three decades of umpiring, who had the worst temper, was?
Probably Lou Piniella.
Lou Piniella. I was going to ask here, Billy.
Billy and I got along for some strange reason because he thought I was Italian. It's because I have a vowel at the end of my name. I'm not. I'm a dirty German and I'm half Irish on the other side. But he thought I was a Goomba. And
yes.
The Goombas in baseball, they have their own little network.
Together.
Oh, yeah, they have their own little network. He used to call me Dags,
yeah.
Like Dago. And I didn't bother to tell him. He was totally wrong.
Yeah.
But as a result, he left me alone.
That's good.
And Lou and I actually got along. The first time we got along, I ended up jerking him, and he bumped me, and he got suspended and everything else. But after that, it was, what do you got, Tim? You know, he left me alone. But I could see, you know, little things like if his pitcher wasn't throwing strikes, he hated pitchers. And if they weren't throwing strikes, he'd sit. And you can't see this at home, but he'd sit in the dugout, and when his feet started moving back and forth like this, hitting his heel on the, I knew he was ready to explode. And if I had second base or home plate and he went out to talk to a pitcher that was struggling, I wanted to be within earshot because it was always really good. You know, he'd get out there and he's trying to be calm and he'd say, you know, son, you're not doing us a whole lot of good walking all these guys. He goes, I don't know what's wrong, Skip. You know, he says, well, what's your best pitch? He goes, well, it's my slider. Well, then throw the bleep, bleep, bleeping thing. You know? And off he goes. That was always the best.
It's always good when the manager really doesn't know what the guy's best pitch is.
Yeah, exactly.
So he has to ask him, and then he's encouraging him to throw it.
Because I always said the worst job in baseball has got to be being Lou Piniella's pitching coach. That's got to be the worst gig ever.
Gets yelled at a lot.
Get him.
When the steroid era was going on, how much conversation was taking place on the field about it?
Not much,
yep,
to my recollection. And, of course, we as umpires, we were really in the dark. When I first came up, you know, they had these little weight rooms at the park, and it looked like, you know, they might have had a bench with a barbell on it that some, looks like you bought it at somebody's garage sale.
Yes.
And they had a treadmill and a jump rope hanging on a hook, you know, and that was it. You know, and then over time, they started putting these facilities in the stadiums that were like Lifetime Fitness. I mean, they had everything and you know, double, triple everything. And their goal was they wanted their players to live in the community in the off season, so they would provide the facility for them,
yep,
to work,
sure,
out rather than going to their homes. And we just thought, as umpires, you know, and it was the beginning with Canseco and McGuire and those guys, I just looked at the facilities and go, man, these guys, they're just putting in the time. You know,
yeah,
they've got,
right,
fitness, they got diet, they got all these things at their disposal now. And I was too dumb to know any better. And then when our next generation of umpires came up and those kids worked out in the minor leagues and they knew those guys in the minor leagues, they knew. They were the ones that pointed it out to us.
Yeah. There
ain't no way.
Yeah.
So what do you mean? What do you mean there's no way? I said, you can't get that big that fast. Not him. That guy was, you know,
when
180
I was
pounds.
80, yeah.
Yeah, now he looks like Mr. Potato Head. So it's just something, you know, they knew and we didn't, and then all of a sudden it blew up.
The best player during your days as a Major League Baseball umpire was?
I get the question a lot, and it's always going to be a list of names. The typicals, Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, Dave Winfield, Roberto Alomar, Barry Bonds, George Brett, you know, the usual suspects. But if you're going to make me name one,
yep,
it's Ken Griffey Jr., hands down. Kirby Puckett, I miss Kirby. You know,
yep, right.
I don't want to slight anyone,
yep,
but Ken Griffey Jr. was the most talented baseball player I ever saw.
I mean, his numbers are still stunning. But if he stays healthy in Cincinnati,
mm-hmm,
I think he's viewed as one of the five best players of all time.
No question.
Right?
No question. And you know, he had some sort of deficiency that made his, I don't know if you call it his like his hamstring and his tendons and things like that. That's where he had his problems.
Yeah, right.
And when he tore his hamstring in Cincinnati, and as most of you know, you have a calf or a hamstring or a groin injury that you can't play through that. Well, he had this surgery on his hamstring that's never been performed before.
Hmm.
What they did, they went in, and I didn't know anything about it because he was back in Cincinnati and he'd been on the DL and he was back playing. He was going to center field, and I was working second, and he had a little pink spot on the back of his hammy, on the back of his thigh. And I said, "Hey, it looks like you're leaking a little bit there." And he goes, "Is it bleeding?" And I said, "Well, I don't know if it's pinkish. It looks like you're seeping a little bit." He goes, "Oh, okay. If it's just seeping, don't worry about it." Okay.
Jeez.
So the next day, it was the Sunday before the All-Star break.
Yep.
And the Cincinnati Inquirer had this 4-page cover story about Ken Griffey and his surgery and his recovery, because he was out for more,
yeah,
than a year.
That's right.
Right.
Yep.
And what they did, they went in like to the middle of the back of the thigh, right? And they severed his hamstring.
Mm.
And they pulled it together, they tied it, and then at the base of his tailbone, they screwed it in. And he sat in a,
wow,
wheelchair for like 9 months, just in a wheelchair with his legs straight out and his foot pointing straight up. And they call it the junior surgery, kind of like the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
He was the first guy to ever have it done. And and then 3 months of slow, finally rehab and,
yeah,
and come back to play. And the story featured there was a college stud football player that was just about to have the same surgery for the second time ever performed. And Junior said, "Well, his best friend's going to be the pizza delivery guy." that's all I did for 9 months, was sit there and watch TV and eat pizza. But just a super guy.
Yeah.
Great dad, great husband, great player, you know.
He was the real deal.
He was.
I'm already 6 minutes late because you're such a good storyteller.
Hey.
Thank you, my friend.
Always
all right,
good.
Round of applause for Timmy Cheetah. Go see him up at Giggles Campfire. They'll have some fun, good food, music. Jamie Ukas is next on CCO. Getting to her way, way too late. Jamie, I apologize. Jamie's here on the... Yeah. Oh, was it your fault? We were trying to track it. Dave, you got to give me a little more volume. I'm kind of losing myself here a little bit. Where were you? What was going on?
I was stuck in traffic in apparently a place I did not have cell reception, so I apologize. I'm now on my way and talking to you.
Send me $10,000 and we're all good. We're all even if you send me $10,000. I'll wait here at the fair until I get it.
Take it out of the pay you owe me. Yeah, yes. Take it out of the pay you owe me for this.
Okay, your first memory, Jamie Ukas, of the State Fair is?
Ooh, I feel like coming with my grandfather, we'd always come the first Friday of the fair and have French fries.
Please, for the love of God, tell me you weren't putting ketchup on them.
No, gosh, no.
Thank you. Harrigan, that's a patriot right here.
Yes, well done.
Thank you. Who's with us? Let's ban ketchup from the United States of America. That's what we should do. Do you have one memory which stands out when you were working here at Channel 4?
I have several. I do have a memory that is kind of crazy. I told somebody about the other day. When I was about 10 years old, so not while I was at CCO, but when I was 10, I came
I was
down
say,
with like
you started early at Channel 4, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. But I came down with this flu and or something, and I didn't want to tell my parents because I didn't want to ruin the day that I wasn't feeling well, because we always went the first Friday of the fair. So I didn't tell anyone that I wasn't feeling well, and we go through the day, and I'm getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And my poor mother, I'm like laying on the ground in like the barn, trying to just like cool off. And she comes over and is like, "Are you all right?" They had to take me to the emergency services. I had a fever of 105.
What are
so
you
had
doing?
To put me in an ice bath.
Oh my God! That
so
could have
they
been
put
awful.
Me in an ice bath. Yes, it was horrible. So that's obviously one that sticks out in the back of my mind. But I have to tell you, the people, the emergency services at the State Fair are excellent. So,
well, I'll say this. First day of the fair, you know where CCO Radio is. We have Sweet Martha's to my left. We have the GOP booth to my right. Individual, Jamie, collapsed.
Oh.
I think it was around 2 o'clock at the Republican booth. Dean Phillips is out here. His brother had to go over there and bring the man back to life.
Right, wow.
Right in front of us. It was frightening. We really haven't talked about it too much, but then Dean and I, we talked about it a little bit afterwards, and he talked, I think, was his brother's name Tyler? I think it was Tyler, who's a doctor. And thank God he was here because something could have happened. But you're right. The emergency personnel out here is absolutely spectacular. Okay, I have a number of topics for you. Let's start with your preferred country. Here's how I ranked Jamie Ukas' countries. Australia 1, United States 2. Australia just passed a law where businesses are not allowed to connect with their employers after work. It's the disconnect law. If Jamie Ukas was president of the United States of America, by the way, I'm for that. I'm for you as president. And you could institute that policy. And businesses, let's say it's a traditional 9-to-5 job, and they were not allowed to contact their employee once it hit 5 o'clock or until it hit 9 o'clock. Is Czar Ukas in favor of that?
First of all, I'm never running for president because I don't have that big of an ego. I just don't. That's too hard of a job. So, first of all, knock me off that. Second of all, based on my experience in France, who also has extreme labor laws.
Yes, they do. Pretty much the same thing.
Pretty much, well, it goes even further because I took my laptop out at lunch to try to write a script, and I was told, "We will not serve you if you work. You must eat lunch."
Are you serious? Oh, man.
Yes. So I see where it's a benefit, but not for every job and not for every industry. And, you know, so, like, I saw how it can backfire where I needed to get a script in to be able to, like, enjoy the rest of my day, and the French wouldn't let me eat lunch because of it. So there.
Take that, France. Yeah. No, it should not be a law of the country. And I get it. There are some bosses who abuse it, go way too far. They're a bully. But every job is not the job the two of us have. But the two of us have jobs in the media broad spectrum where we need to be plugged in, not just whatever shift it might be. And there are some jobs where you also have to have that as a possibility. And I get where it can be very frustrating, Jamie, if you do have the 9-to-5 job and you work your tail off and your boss is just relentless and going too far. I feel for them, but I still don't think it should be the law of the nation.
No. And, you know, it's funny you saying that. I had a boss once who said to me, if you want to work in news, you have to realize it's a lifestyle, not a job. And I do think there are a lot of us who, you know, want the work-life balance, but have to admit that we went into industries that are demanding. You have to then find your own boundaries, I think, with yourself and your family and what's good for you. And maybe you have to admit sometimes you got to make a career change if it's not working.
There's a MinnPost story I saw today about what jurors get paid. And it's $20 a day through the courts here in this state. That's embarrassing, right?
Yes.
What is a fair figure where, by the way, taxpayers are going to have to pay for? What is a reasonable amount that if Jamie Ukas or anybody out here in our audience, where they get brought in as a prospective juror, and by the way, it takes like 3 weeks of their life, so they're going every day. What should somebody from Czar Ukas, again, I make you Czar again, what should they get paid?
Look, I think, you know, what's even reasonable? I mean, $20 can't even buy you breakfast these days. So I think you have to look at, do you just look at the meals? So like maybe breakfast, lunch, and gas would be probably what? Like $150 a day?
Well, it's each circumstance, right? You know, it's where are you coming from? What are you getting? It's shameful, though, that it's $20. I mean, you're asking people to stop their lives. You don't know how, the boss is going to handle this and what you're catching up on. You don't know what's going on in your personal life, maybe with the kids issue that gets more complicated. And that's what you're getting? The $20? Come on.
No.
That's terrible. Okay, here's another one. Qantas. They inadvertently sold first-class fares by mistake at a rate on flights between Australia and the U.S. 85% less than the usual price. Qantas said they'll switch passengers who bought these tickets into business class one step down from first class at no additional cost. Knock it off, Qantas. Come on. Let people get the break. You screwed up. Just build up some loyalty with those customers. What do you think?
I agree with you. I feel like if you're the company who makes the mistake, you don't make the customer pay for it.
I think that's the way to go. We got to fly. Sorry I was behind a little bit out here at the fair. You know what it's like. No problem with the signal. Be well, and more conventional show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me. Have fun at the fair. I missed it.
Jamie Ukas. Yep. 52 past 1 here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. I think DeRush is right. It could be over. I haven't felt well for 6 days. I took a nap yesterday, and I went to bed at 9. Who am I?
Adam Carter.
Honestly, that is Carter's
it's over.
Normal schedule. I don't know. I got the headache. My equilibrium's not right. And then cheated. I love cheating. There's Lyme disease, Meniere's disease. I'm like, Tim, I'm hoping it's just a bug. Don't be telling me that stuff. I mean, I love him, but do you want the friend who, when you say you're not feeling well, goes right away to, is it leukemia?
Yeah, he just starts going through WebMD on his phone. It could be.
I mean, I'm glad that we have WebMD, but not for me.
No.
Because when it's something about yourself or a family member or a friend, and it's a health issue, and you go to Google, it's villainous.
Terrible.
It is.
It's always a terrible idea, yet we always do it.
We do it. We think we have discipline. Eh, we really don't. All right, Dave's got a good State Fair story when we come back. The former Speaker of the House, Kurt Dowd's going to join us. Maybe we'll ask Kurt how many fake dogs he has, because that's among the dumbest stories that we've had in the history of America. Now, I'm not saying like yesterday. I'm saying the history of America. Linda's Construction Time Check is time for you to get a complimentary roof inspection and get a free installation labor on GAF asphalt shingles.